Hi folks, Nathan here again with Family Protection Ministries. Thanks for joining us once again for the front line. I am giving you today an update on AB 1955, a little bit there, talk about where the bill is at, a little bit of background too as well. There have been a lot of action items that have shifted over the last few days, and also some more speeches made about this bill by a number of state senators. And I think it's helpful to go back in time a little bit to look at some of the things that we've actually reported on that relate to this case in terms of federal court decisions, where this new bill, AB 1955, and how it deals with parents' rights in regard with knowledge about their children, and in this particular case with regard to public schools and teachers. It's interesting how it relates back to the Mirabelli case. So we're going to get into that just briefly with a little bit of a reflection on from a clip that where we interviewed Mr. Michael Ramey from parentalrights.org, and we are going also to talk a little bit about some of the things coming up, what are the next steps, and how you can make a difference. So let's get into it. Welcome to the front line with FPM, where we talk about California politics, homeschool freedom, parental rights, and the family. I'm your host, Nathan Pierce, and thanks for joining us today. Let's jump right in and see what's going on here on the front line. All right, I want to talk first about what the status is on AB 1955. Let's start with that. You might notice I'm not in the normal place for doing my podcast recordings. I am in Southern California today. This is Friday, and I'll be heading back. I'm doing a couple of speaking events down here this weekend, and I'm heading back up to Sacramento on Sunday. We'll be doing some work in Sacramento on the first couple of days of the week, and then Wednesday is the hearing for AB 1955 in the Assembly Education Committee. You may be surprised by that, because last week it wasn't in the Education Committee at all. It's actually had quite the traveling for this bill. It was in the Senate at this time last week, or had just come out of the Senate at this time last week, having passed the floor and gone to the Assembly floor with the expectation that it would possibly just go straight to a floor vote and then move on to the governor's desk. However, they did pull it back into committee, which is appropriate for this bill, seeing as how the Education Committee never actually saw AB 1955 in its current form. They saw it in a very different bill. It was completely gutted and amended once it got over to the Senate side. But a little bit of history: AB 1955 actually started in the Assembly, went through the entire legislative process on the Assembly side, then went over to the Senate, because it has to go through both houses, one after the other, before going to the governor. But the funny thing with 1955 is that when it did pass out of the Assembly the first time and went over to the Senate, it was then completely gutted and changed to a completely different topic. Now we have this bill, 1955, that has to do with parents' rights, students in public school, and teachers, and specifically the role of the state government and the role of the local school boards, and the ability of school boards to control their schools. Now, the bill is currently sitting in the California State Assembly Education Committee. That bill will be heard in the Education Committee. It's scheduled to be heard there on Wednesday, the 26th. And so I expect that there may be quite a bit of time set aside for this bill, because I imagine a lot of people will show up to testify on it. If you're interested in doing that, lining up and making sure your voice is heard, you're welcome to come to the Capitol and make your voice heard there, because there won't be a lot of time for each individual person, but the more people we have, the more of an impact it can have. Now, I have seen things happen with this particular committee where they may cut off testimony after a certain amount of time, because they just decide that they are going to be done after a certain amount of time and they don't want to hear anymore. But the volume of people still can have a tremendous amount of impact if it's significant. So if you're able to make it to the Capitol for that, I would encourage you to do so, but know that you may not ultimately be heard. So one way you can be sure to be heard is if you make a phone call to your legislator, or show up at their district office and drop off a letter, or if you mail a letter, if there's time left before Wednesday. But also be sure that those phone calls don't underestimate the value of a phone call, because phone calls really can make a difference. Let me just give you a story to help you understand the significance of that. A few years ago, I was visiting a friend's office in the state capitol. I was visiting a legislative staffer and talking with him about some things, and I realized that their office was quite a bit busier than usual. And so I asked, what's going on? What's all the excitement here? And I had sent out an action alert on a bill related to mandatory kindergarten a couple of days before. And he mentioned to me that when I was asking, why are all these phone calls coming in? What's keeping you guys so busy? He said, oh, those are your people. Those are your people calling. And then, of course, for me, that was kind of a shock. I didn't realize that it had such an impact, because our folks were calling in and making a difference. And I almost felt bad, because, well, I did actually feel bad, because this was my friend's office and I was tying up his staff with all these phone calls. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize they were gonna take up so much of your folks' time. And he said, oh no, we like it. We need to hear these calls. We need to hear from you. And we like taking the time to hear from constituents. Now, you won't hear that in every office. You might hear some annoyance from some legislators and staff, but you need to know that there can be profound impact when a lot of people make those phone calls and call in, make their voice heard on a bill, and it changes things in the Capitol. It makes people think twice about things. It makes them not be able to say nobody cares about this bill. And so I would encourage you to remember that there's a value in a phone call, and it does not take very long. You can call the number, tell them to ask them to vote no on the bill, and that's it. They might ask you what your address is, so they can make sure that you live in their district, so they know that this is actually somebody who would be voting in the next election, somebody that they actually represent. But you're going to be, and that's not to target you or track you down. That's to help them understand whether or not that they represent you or not. And so they're really aware when they get phone calls. It does impact them, and it does help them make decisions. Sometimes it doesn't always help them to make the decisions for the right reasons, but it can help protect your freedom. So realize that it matters. So I wanted to give a little bit more background as well on AB 1955, which this bill does have this issue with actually taking authority from certain places to other places. Now, when you think of freedom, when you think of that principle of freedom, we're actually thinking of it in terms of a restriction of government from taking the freedom, because we have freedom naturally. Freedoms are the natural way that we function. And the way the world works is that we sometimes, when we have governments, we have to actually tell the government, you can't take this particular freedom away, otherwise they might do it. And so in this context of dealing with public schools, we're dealing with local school boards, and we're talking about the flow of information from parents at the school to from teachers at the school to parents, this particular bill is addressing that flow of information. And the local school boards, these individuals that are elected locally by families in the district, in the school district, they're elected to the school board. Those people have made policies about the flow of information to parents of students that are in the school. And what's happened is people at the state level don't like the policies that the local school boards are making about the flow of information to parents. Now, one of the issues with that is what they're coming up with as a solution to the fact that the people at the state level, state legislators, don't like that control that local school boards are able to have in terms of protecting the freedom that parents have. The state is saying, no, you local school boards are not allowed to protect parents' rights. And so they're saying, we are going to take that control away from you local school boards, and we're going to take that authority at the state level, make it universal across the state that no local school boards can make policies about this. And it's pretty extreme, and it really is not a good precedent to be setting for other areas, and it kind of can scare you about where else this might lead in terms of taking a more centralized approach to government as a whole. So that's kind of a scary principle that is being promoted here with this bill, AB 1955. It is not a good step for freedom. It is a direction that we do not want to go. We do not want it to go that way for the sake of families, for the sake of education, for the sake of government at all, period, and certainly not for the sake of the freedom of the individual in the state of California. So looking back, a number of legislators have referenced a case that came out last year that we actually discussed on this podcast. And I think it's really helpful to go back and review some of what was said there about the Mirabelli case. And because this is a federal court, federal case that was determined that this, that these policies should go a certain way and the authority should come down a certain way. And the state of California has decided, no, we don't like Mirabelli. We don't like the federal courts, so we're going a different direction. And that's not really how it's supposed to work in our country, but that's nevertheless what the state government is doing. So I'd like to go back and review that a little bit with you. And so let's go ahead and take a look at that. So here's a look back at my interview with Michael Ramey on our podcast last year, 2023. This was in episode 39 of our podcast. You can go back and take a look at the whole interview with Michael Ramey on the Mirabelli case if you go back to episode 39 of the Frontline podcast last year. So check that out if you want to have the more full background and context for this. But let's go ahead and take a listen to the discussion about what this means for homeschool families. Why should homeschool families care about this particular issue? Sometimes it's difficult for homeschool families to understand why I talk about parental rights issues on when I'm supposed to be dealing with homeschool issues, you know, and where is the connect there? And so I was thinking, because you're a parental rights organization, maybe it would help if you had any thoughts on why, from your perspective, somebody that cares about homeschooling should care about parental rights in general. How does that matter for homeschooling? Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. Well, rights in our country involve limiting the government. And limiting the government's power. So that's what the Constitution does, and that's what our rights are about. And so if the government has the authority to overstep parental rights in these other areas, for public school parents, or, for child welfare cases, those who are struggling with poverty and being accused of neglect when they're doing their very best, if the government has the authority to step into the family for those things, then it has the authority to step into the family for homeschooling and for Christian homeschoolers and conservatives as well. So I've likened it to, and either side has the potential to be short-sighted on this, but it really comes down to, I'm not worried about that hole because that hole is in your end of the boat. Is really what it comes down to. We're in the same boat. And so we need to focus on plugging all of the holes that we can, or the boat's going to sink. It's not like one end of the boat can sink and the other is going to survive.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to put it. Thanks for that. That's kind of a sobering thing to think of it that way, but it's a good parallel because it's that serious. I mean, I
It
think.
really is. And so many of us are saying, you know, well, I'm not going to worry about that because that hole's not in my end of the boat.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wow.
And I mean, there is some degree to which that's excusable if I am putting all of my effort into plugging the holes at my end of the boat, so I don't have bandwidth to plug the holes at your end of the boat. But that's not generally the case. That's not generally what we're dealing with. We've got the bandwidth to, I mean, we need to see it all as one big picture, as one big boat, and help each other.
Yeah, instead of just patching our holes, keeping an eye on them, and with our other eye, look at the other end sinking and say, oops, too bad.
Right.
Too bad for you guys at your end. And
Right,
because that's
exactly.
short, like you said, short-sighted, and it's not realizing that that end of the boat sinking is eventually going to take down our end.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I like that. And that kind of leads into Mirabelli too.
Yes.
Because that's even more along the lines of sort of transitioning from 957, which is sort of broader in a sense that it affects any family that's dealing with a custody dispute, right? And as that's just the immediate effect. I think long term we could look at it as no, this is an indicator of a trajectory that's going to impact all families.
Right.
And
It's gonna, I mean, it will weigh in family court, period. Right now it's custody cases, but once that idea goes into the family court, then it's gonna be anything that goes to family court. It's gonna be, you know, whether or not your children are being taken away by CPS or whatever it might be.
Okay, so looking at the Mirabelli case, and this is a public school issue, right? I mean, that's the situation.
Yeah, this is at that end of the boat.
So how do we look at this Mirabelli case? First of all, is the outcome good or bad? Do we like this case? I mean, it seems like a bad situation that it started with, but ultimately, if we're not, let's see, I'll say instead of we, I'll say if I'm not concerned about public school issues, again, how does this affect me? And how? How does this, what's the result of this?
Okay, so a lot to unpack there. The case deals with the school system was forcing teachers to lie to parents about their children's names or pronouns or gender identity. So if my little boy Charles is going to school and wants to be called Charlotte and go by her, then they would call him Charlotte and refer to him as her at school. But then when I'm talking with them, they would only refer to him as Charles and he. And so to keep me in the dark, so I don't know what's going on in terms of the health and the welfare of my child. And so that's kind of the situation. And a couple of teachers were really uncomfortable with being put in a position of having to lie to parents. It violated their religious principles. And so they sued. And if I can just read one paragraph, this is sort of the summarizing paragraph from the case. And I think this goes toward. And then I'll unpack it some more, but it goes toward answering your question about why this matters to all of us. So it says, the school's policy is a trifecta of harm. It harms the child who needs parental guidance and possibly mental health intervention to determine if the incongruence is organic or whether it is the result of bullying, peer pressure, or a fleeting impulse. It harms the parents by depriving them of the long-recognized 14th Amendment right to care, guide, and make healthcare decisions for their children. And finally, it harms plaintiffs, this is to say, those school teachers, who are compelled to violate the parents' rights by forcing plaintiffs to conceal information they feel is critical for the welfare of their students, violating plaintiffs' religious beliefs. So basically, it hurts everyone. It hurts the children, it hurts the parents, and it hurts the teachers who are forced to lie, who have a religious compunction against doing that. So, So really what it comes down to and why it matters to parents, even not in the public schools, is again, we're in the same boat. If the government can lie to the public school students or public school parents about their students, then the government can lie to you. And, you know, they can hide things from you about your child. Now, right now, the most obvious contact point between a parent or a child, excuse me, between a child and the government is when you send your child to the public school. But if the government can lie to you about your child where they feel that it's a healthcare issue, then there are other ways that they're going to be able to do that. It might be, you know, you go to get your child's medical records, and now under HIPAA, which is supposed to, which is a government law, a federal law to protect your child's privacy, and you are the child's representative. So it's protecting your child's privacy for you, not from you. But that could change. If the government is allowed now to keep secrets from you about your minor child, then we could see that that change. And I mean, there are already some troubling carve outs as far as HIPAA goes, and I probably shouldn't have started to open that can of worms. But but I mean, it would just get worse if the courts established that the government can lie to you about your child. Then just take a moment, homeschool parent, and think about how that could come up for you. And I'm sure you can think of, you can imagine a scenario where the government has some information about your child and your child's health, and they're just going to keep it from you or lie to you about it.
All right. So as we wrap up, I'm grateful for folks like Micah Ramey that can help us see these things in a little bit more clarity. I appreciate his explanations there. So just to wrap up with AB 1955 and to give you sort of next steps, the bill is in the Assembly Education Committee. It'll be heard on the 26th. Make your phone calls to the committee prior to that time. There is a list of names and phone numbers of members of that committee on our website. Visit our website page on AB 1955 get and click on the latest action item at the very top. And so you can get that at fpmca.org/AB1955. That's fpmca.org/AB1955. And click on the latest action item link, and it'll take you to a page with a list of the committee, and make those phone calls, as many as you can. Ask them to vote no, and tell them that you're asking them to vote no, not necessarily because you live in their district, but because they represent all of California in their role in the education committee. Sometimes they will challenge you on that because they feel like they only need to represent people that live in their own district, but that is not the case. They represent the entire state of California on that committee. So make sure that that is something that you are ready to spell out clearly to them, so that they understand that you are asking them in their capacity as a committee member to vote no on that bill. And then make sure also that you contact your own assembly member and make sure that they know that you are asking them to vote no on that bill. And you can find that out at on our website as well, fpmca.org/myrep. Thanks so much, and have a great week. We'll talk to you again next time. Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Frontline with FPM. For more information about the topics we discuss here, check out Family Protection Ministries at fpmca.org and subscribe to our channel.